Hello and welcome. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom show, a bi-monthly show showcasing inspiring women doing amazing work in the world, many of which have risen from some sort of tragedy to triumph or chaos to confidence, and it's an opportunity to showcase what they're up to in the world today.
And now, your headlined guest, Yvonne
E.L. Silver.
She is a confidence catalyst, the founder of Flourish, as well as Women and Wisdom Media. She teaches women leaders, entrepreneurs, and professionals to flourish in business by mastering their confidence and using powerful language for more sales and to grow their team, all for a sustainable business that is fun. Yvonne is the author of the new bestseller, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. Professionally, she is a passionate speaker, coach, chartered HR consultant, and mentorship chair, as well as a radio show host, mother, and wife. Leveraging 25 years of experience in 8 high-growth startups, holding senior corporate roles of founder, vice president, and human resource director, she is creating mentorship programs and feminine workplace cultures which support women's growth and advocate pay equity. And now your host, Yvonne E.L. Silver.
Well, good morning, everybody. If you're here in Calgary, of course, it's noon, lunchtime. Welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom show for today. Very often, I will be bringing in intriguing guests, and every now and then, I actually am my own headliner. So this is one of those moments. I did a show on Christmas morning because I wanted to still connect with my listeners and share some information from my best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. But I wanted everybody else to have a great Christmas as well. So I didn't bring in a guest that day. And today is one of those days as well. We're hot on the heels today from a successful event last week that I hosted in Calgary called How Bold Women Leaders Foster Innovation Power for Business Sustainability. And it was a gathering at the Calgary Petroleum Club looking at the advantages of women's leadership competences, you know, what bold women leaders even are, you know, how you define that, 3 modern methods to elevate employee engagement and increase customer sales, which of course is a key piece here in Calgary right now with a bit of an economic dip that we're in, ways to leverage the advantage of innovation power and what the cost of that is in lost opportunity if it's not expanded, and also looking at a new organizational workplace culture tool that I've developed, which is for women's equality and advancement. So it was an interesting session, some great collaborative conversation and ideas and brainstorming coming out on what we can do to shift the culture in the workplace to be more accepting of bold women leaders, to really build up that bold women's leadership pipeline. So why do I care about this today? Well, certainly business sustainability is a key imperative, and I'm not talking about environmental sustainability here. I'm talking about the capacity to expand and grow our business based on having an engaged workforce. As you heard in my introduction, I have 15 plus years of senior HR experience working in high-tech, high-growth organizations, and then another 10 years working as an executive coach with women leaders, entrepreneurs, startups, and looking at how to engage and empower your workforce so you really have maximum opportunity for those workers to show up being extremely proud of the workplace that they have and the organization they're working with. And in essence, they become your very best salespeople. Now, they're not necessarily trained in sales. However, the fact that they are passionately talking about the workplace that they are so proud of enables them to open conversations in casual settings, whether it be a summer barbecue, an evening networking event, and attract new clients to your business. And when it's not a salesperson and they're handing out a card that doesn't have business development on it, it actually has numerous advantages. So bold women leaders have an opportunity when we address and understand a VUCA environment to engage and empower our staff in a different way than our male counterparts too. If you haven't run across that term before, VUCA, this is from the Center for Creative Leadership back a few years ago, but it's very relevant here in Calgary today. It stands for volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous, VUCA. So what we're encouraging women to do, or I'm encouraging women to do in my coaching practice, is to develop a culture of agility with an emotionally intelligent mindset, fully understanding what your emotional intelligence competencies are, having a mindset that is focused on attraction and retention and developing staff to the best ability of that you can, and leveraging on their strengths and competences, understanding where they may have areas for self-development and growth, and looking at ways to flexibly introduce small bite-sized learning moments. It doesn't have to always be a 2 or 3 day training course. Very often those learnings are in the micro moments. And then developing also a mindset of innovation, accountability, and transparency. So it's really about being nimble, so that you can be resilient and certainly retaining that high accountability. So for leaders, it's about developing a strategic mindset, very self-aware, curious, continuously learning themselves, looking at questioning and being curious around things that are ambiguous, still being very decisive, fostering a mindset of risk, and an ability to assess whether the risk has rewards or if it's just not a timely decision right now. The ability to cross-train and use coaching as an approach to evolve your staff, to really understand how they can do their best work and encourage them to be accountable. Because when you use a coaching approach, and you don't necessarily have to be fully trained in the science of coaching as I am, but even utilizing an approach instead of telling your staff what it is that you want them to do in detail, it's giving them the clear objective and outcome and what the measures of success are for the project, and then inviting them to put their own plan together and asking them how they would tackle it. What would be the first couple of steps in order to start this project off? What do they anticipate might be some areas where they're going to need to stretch a bit, some new knowledge, new insights, new processes that they will have to learn along the way? What's the challenge in it for them, and what's the reward? Because when I did some work a number of years ago for the Winford Group, which is a Calgary-based compensation survey company, I remember looking at some of the data, and almost every year, year after year, employees were asking for interesting and challenging work. So if we hand feed them and give them every little step to take, where's the challenge in that? We want them to come up with their own ideas of how they're going to tackle it, leveraging their insights, their wisdom, their knowledge, and then they own the process, and they're much more accountable because they've brought in their ideas of how they're going to work within that project timeline. So it's really an interesting topic, and empowering women to work more effectively in business is what I'm all about. I mean, if I look at the world of business today on a global level, the United Nations identified 17 sustainable development goals, including gender equality as number 5. So, you know, gender equality is a lofty goal to reach, as it is workplace parity based on the current number of executive positions being held by women. Now, at Catalyst, which is a research firm well known over the past 50 years for collecting data on women's topics, their research, which I put in my book, had shown that women were holding at the time just 21.2% of board seats in Standard & Poor companies. That was in 2017. The book launched and hit bestseller status in October 2018, last year. And 26.5% in executive or senior roles from a total of 44.7% of employees. So think about this. You know, how could equality in wages, respect in the workplace, and confidence rise for women if that ratio was 50% of women holding leadership roles? So, you know, this is part of the work I do. I teach women to flourish in business. And as a professional executive coach, I help women elevate their voices, have more confident conversations, to ask for what they really want confidently and achieve it. So I'm combining my techniques learned over the past 25 plus years of high growth business success, first in sales roles and then later as a senior HR leader, working with startups, and then more recently as a professional coach and mentor. So I've guided hundreds of sales conversations, interviewed and hired over 6,000 people, asked thousands of coaching questions to help people explore how to develop purposeful and fulfilling lives. And in the past decade, working specifically with women and female entrepreneurs. And that's the context for my book. So when I think about women's empowerment, there are certainly some principles that are already in existence to guide this conversation. And at the United Nations Global Compact on March 8, 2010, which was International Women's Day that year, the Women's Empowerment Principles, Equality Means Business Initiative, was launched. And these empowerment principles suggest 7 steps that companies can take to empower women in the workplace. So as I developed my own workplace assessment tool, which is really looking at the workplace culture for women's equality and advancement to flourish, I was leveraging those 7 women's empowerment principles. Now, if you're not familiar with them, at a high level, I mean, you know, certainly they ask for, firstly, to establish high-level corporate leadership for gender equality. Secondly, to treat all women and men fairly at work with respect and support human rights and non-discrimination. Thirdly, to ensure the health, safety, and well-being of all women and men workers. Fourthly, to promote education, training, and professional development for women. Fifthly, to implement enterprise development, supply chain, and marketing practices that empower women, so the businesses are not only profitable, but they have a constant flow of new business revenue and delivery practices as well. Promote equality throughout community initiatives and advocacy, and lastly, to measure and public report on progress to achieve gender equality. So those are 7 great guiding principles. However, I felt that they really needed to dig a little deeper, and that's why I spent time over the last few months to develop a women's study, an assessment tool. And part of the reason for this is I don't think that those principles certainly are very flexible and can be adapted into numerous environments globally. However, looking at the North American landscape, I think we benefit if we actually dig a little deeper. So I've actually divided that assessment tool into 3 areas. I've divided it up so that we can have some current state indicators, first of all. You know, what's the starting point? Because if we know what it is that we want to measure, and we know what the starting point is, then the next pieces, the perspectives, the practices, and the processes, which are the other 3 components of the assessment, start to indicate more clearly what the measures of success look like. So, for example, you know, if you think about a starting point, it may be in your organization, and this is going to be tweaked a little bit for each group, but it may be that the percentage of women on your board or on your executive team or in senior VP roles or VP roles or director, manager, and supervisor roles, you know, are those percentages indicative today of exactly where you want to see your equality? And if not, that's your starting point. What are your current percentages of women in senior roles? Maybe you dive deeper and look at the number of women that have been promoted in the past 3 years. Maybe it's the number of women given salary increases over 3% in the past 3 years. And I say 3 years because certainly in the Alberta economy, you would have to be doing exceptional work or you'd be taking on a much bigger, broader role if you were receiving a 3% plus increase right now. And that's just based on what's happening in the marketplace. Maybe it's looking at whether you have a women's resource center in place. And that's an easy one to say yes or no. Maybe it's looking at your employee assistance program metrics. Now, you're not going to be able to dive deeply into the data, even if you talk with your HR leader, to see details of who's been applying for employee assistance within which category. But generally, insurance companies that operate the EAP programs are able to give you some broad categories to say, you know, X number of your staff had approached the EAP program because they needed support in this particular area. Maybe it was about relationships. Maybe it was about workplace stress. Maybe it was about finances. But if we think about all the roles that women juggle, you know, we're still in very many family environments, taking on the majority of the household chores, taking on the majority of the childcare, as well as the elder care. So very often getting really squeezed in the middle for time, because there's numerous responsibilities. And if we're a working mother as well, then, you know, those things start to create stress. And the EAP usage is just one more indicator that women have been tapping into the program. And it may also provide you with some very specific data to include in programming. So the perspective is very much looking at, you know, what are the views of leadership? You know, how does your leadership currently view women leaders? And that's something that I'll be collating through interviews. You know, what do they value about the competencies that women leaders are bringing to the table? What's their perspective on coaching, for example? Is coaching considered to be a gift that's given to women who are doing really well and are clearly identified as having the potential to take on a more senior or expansive role? Or is coaching still considered to be a remedial tool? You know, if you're having a challenge, then we'll assign you a coach. So it's almost like, you know, fixing a problem. So, you know, those are just a few examples of the perspective. When we get into practices, you know, what kind of, health and wellness programs are available during those phases that women uniquely go through, pregnancy, menopause, maybe it is about transition into a new role. You know, how does the organization support change overall? Because I think when we're adding new technology, we're adding new processes, we're refining, we're getting more streamlined as a business to stay profitable, very often we hit change saturation. The leaders of the organization are piling on so many changes that with all those added personal responsibilities I mentioned earlier, of childcare and home care, et cetera, adding on one more change is very often the straw that can break the camel's back. So with that said, there is one final piece, which is processes. So, you know, your practices may be something that's not cast in stone. It may not have a process wrapped around it. It's a general guideline, a theme of what you'd like to do. And then the third piece is about, or sorry, the fourth category is processes. So, you know, for example, what is your process for approaching equal pay with salary bands and reviewing? You know, do you have a mentorship program in place? And what is the process for applying to that? How do women access it? How is the matching done within organizations? And I brought that in because that's an area of expertise that I have myself been working with mentorship programs, designing and developing custom mentorship programs for different groups over the past few years. And I was recognized for that last fall with a Women of Inspiration Award for the work I've been doing in mentorship. And it's so rewarding to see women grow by being able to really see, you know, it is possible. Here's a role model either within my organization, within my industry, who's actually doing what I want to do at the level I want to do it. And then all things are possible when you can see someone else has been there. They've already paved the path. So the women's assessment is an interesting tool. I'm beta testing it right now. So if you're listening to this radio show and you have an interest in being considered as one of the beta companies, please reach out to me through my website, which is wordswomenandwisdom.com. And there's a contact page on there. And just let me know that you're intrigued to learn more about it, and I'm happy to have a call with you. So let's go to a short intermission just for a moment, and we're going to be right back, and I'm going to be sharing some specific words and word concepts from the best-selling book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. Words in the leadership setting. One of the most important words I very often work with my clients to explore is the word trust. So trust is it's a soul investment in another person, a communication energy that cannot be bought. It has to be earned, and it's typically expanded over time. Now, trust can be difficult to earn, and yet it's so easy to lose someone's trust. We don't instantly trust someone, even if a close friend introduces us. Although in business, the concept of a warm introduction or a referral by a trusted colleague certainly helps to pave the way to help a relationship develop. And as long as expectations are met between both parties, trust evolves. When each person shares common values, whether it's an excellence in customer service, high integrity, promptness, and so on. This helps interactions and conversations flow even more easily. Yet trust is very easily broken when commitments are not followed through. And it's hard to extend trust to another if you don't trust yourself first. So as motivational speaker Lisa Nichols shared in a stage talk around the time of her book launch, her book Abundance Now, Amplify Your Life and Achieve Prosperity, she mentions that trusting in yourself first is key. Even if you felt that you've hit rock bottom, from there the only way is up, she says. Faith is believing in the unseen anyway. And she had enough faith to say, I know, I don't necessarily need to see it yet, but I know abundance is available to everyone. I'm not an exception. I'm an average, ordinary woman who chose every day to make one more extraordinary decision. It was an interesting YouTube capture of that talk. So trusting yourself includes understanding, you know, how you respond from a place of confidence and knowing your ability to choose when to be silent during times of deep emotion as well, whether that's anger, tears, disappointment, fear, etc. So if you're, you know, if you're being chased down a dark alley, then you need to hide. Yeah, the ability to keep quiet and not let a potential attacker hear you may in fact save your life. Mind you, screaming at the top of your lungs may equally attract help and save your life. In everyday situations, your ability to resist blurting out an angry response may just be what keeps a relationship intact. Can you trust your emotions? Using your voice in strength and trust the signals your body's expressing and interpret them wisely. Can you recognize the rush of energy and heat in your body and feel where it appears first? Your throat, your stomach, your head, you know, buzzing in your body, etc. Feeling heat can very often indicate stuck energy. Now, I'm a Reiki practitioner as well, so in my Reiki studies, I learned how to recognize and interpret when energy is building up in various parts of the body. And feeling a lump in the throat very often indicates that you're angry about not speaking up, or a lump of stuck energy in your stomach may indicate mixed disgust and anger. So when you're speaking up, you know, you trust that your opinion will be accepted rather than rejected, or at least heard and validated, and, you know, recognize that you have your opinion, something that you value and want to take a stand for. And while others may not agree or have the same insight and perspective as you do, it's about respect. So when you trust that you have been heard, you will be more willing to agree to disagree if your conversation partner has an opposing viewpoint when respectful conversation has been practiced. So, in a confident conversation is evolved by building positive energy and synergy, by stepping forward in a collaborative dance of discussion. You build the relationship first by looking for those common ground items or common viewpoints before moving on to more contentious issues. Moving too soon to put the spotlight on something that's not working or about an injustice or unfair practice when that trust has not yet been earned is like, you know, if you'll pardon the analogy, jumping into bed on the first date, as my colleague Teresa de Grobar, the author of the best-selling book Mass Influence, says. So build that relationship first. Get to know the other person and their perspective and understand what's important to them in the discussion? Why does this topic matter to them? And as mentioned in chapter one in the book, one of the words used there and explored is the word why. You know, if you're using an open question initially, such as what's important about this topic, or what would a successful conclusion look like to you? Or what would the fairest alternatives include? Then, you know, many people want to feel that there's a negotiation in place and it's been concluded in a fair way. It's reciprocity. So before sharing your opinion, gather your facts, the indisputable facts or examples of outcomes, and bring an open mind combined with a few possible solutions, ready to co-create through collaborative conversation. So remember, there's, you know, that expression, there's no I in the word team. And watch how a better outcome emerges through discussion, through brainstorming and co-creation, and, you know, trusting that the process will conclude positively. You're paying attention to your own body language, but also paying attention to the body language of the other person. Watch to see if they're leaning into the conversation with interest or sitting back in their chair with a reserved pose of observation. So when you're going into these conversations, you know, very often it's a simple case of jotting down a few critical bullet points, you know, put it on the back of a business card even before joining the meeting to really keep your intention clear. What is it that you want to walk away from that meeting with? How do you want to foster and build trust? How much can you ask for in the meeting will be determined by the engagement of your partner. And when you make a firm commitment to show up as the best version of yourself, you know, prepare in advance, it's more easy to foster trust from others much more readily. There's actually a poem I'm just going to read from the book. It's actually a poem called Make a Promise to Yourself, which was adopted in 1922. So this is not a new poem. You may have heard it before, but I think it's worth rereading. It was developed and adopted by the Optimist Creed, Optimist International, which is a global service club, which they raise their own funds for their own service project and are focusing on improving the lives of children. So here's the poem, or it's not a poem, it's a creed. Make a promise to yourself to be so strong that nothing can disturb your peace of mind. To talk health, happiness, and prosperity to every person you meet. To make all your friends feel that there's something in them. To look at the sunny side of everything and make your optimism come true. To think only the best. To work only for the best. And to expect only the best. To be just as enthusiastic about the success of others as you are about your own. To forget the mistakes of the past and press on to the greater achievements of the future. To wear a cheerful expression at all times and give every living creature you meet a smile. To give so much time to the improvement of yourself that you have no time to criticize others. To be too large for worry, too noble for anger, too strong for fear, and too happy to permit the presence of trouble. To think well of yourself and to proclaim this fact to the world, not in loud words, but great deeds. To live in faith that the whole world is on your side, so long as you are true to the best that is in you. Yeah. Optimist Creed. With that, I'm going to share a little bit more through a video clip that was actually introduced last year with the introduction of the book. I had so many people asking me, you know, what's the book about and how did it get started? So I put an introductory video together. Now on the radio, obviously you can't see it, but if you want to watch the full video, it is on my website, wordswomenandwisdom.com, right on the main page, and it also shows the Amazon link to order a copy of the book if you're outside of Calgary and we're not connecting in the next few months. So here's the clip about the book, Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations.
Ladies, a new book is on the horizon. Words, Women and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. This new book is for women ready to rediscover their inner confidence, take a stand for themselves in life and business by using more powerful language. Words are so powerful and already changed history. On October 5th, the New York Times published a story detailing decades of allegations of sexual harassment against film producer Harvey Weinstein. And numerous women in the entertainment industry found the courage to go public, banding together with a powerful voice that change is long overdue. Even Oprah Winfrey, television network icon, gave a rousing speech at the Golden Globe Awards in January. The media has showcased the Time's Up Legal Defense Fund. The Me Too movement is flourishing and all signaling it's time for women's equality and change. I believe it's time to give women the verbal agility to create more confident conversations. Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations is the book which provides practical approaches for women to ask for what we really want and receive our request.
Hello, I'm Yvonne Silver, certified executive coach and senior HR professional, seasoned in business. I teach women to flourish in business by using more confident language to help empower and engage others. This book is the result of over 35 years of my career, professional career, working in four different countries. I've interviewed over 6,000 people in my career for job interviews, executive coaching, for sales and consulting conversations. And I've listened to hundreds of women in particular who are looking for a better way to collaborate. They're looking to be asking for what they really want and heard and validated, especially in business. And women often earn less than men for doing exactly the same job. It's 2018. It's time for change.
The Modern Art of Confident Conversations explores words we use at home, at work, words that trip us up, elevate us, and encourage us, and when no words are even required. It is about how to leverage the power of words in a positive, in a collaborative and impactful way. Now I work with women entrepreneurs and leaders who are empowering other women and leading through mentorship programs and my coaching, public speaking, interviews, and writing. I'm passionate about women's equality. Why? I grew up in England in a house with a flow of negative comments from my father, which destroyed my mum's dignity until she became an empty shell of the vibrant woman she'd once been, belittled by constant criticism and questioning of her abilities. Through my own life journey and supporting hundreds of female clients, I've discovered critical words to ask to get what we really want collaboratively. I know there are critical links between our language, our behavior, our mindset, and our success in life. Words from a song can replay in our head for hours, and poetry can bring a lump in our throats. I've combined my insights with interviews from influential women, sharing their pearls of wisdom, supplemented with research and reference studies from established scholars. Women are rising up. It's time for women to be heard. Let's use more powerful, positive language and join the rising tide of change. This book is for you, a woman looking to the future, ready to embrace significant positive changes in your life by using more confident language. Eliminate those words that drain your power, add words that energize and invigorate, and shift from ordinary to extraordinary. Just one word can change your life. I believe every woman needs their own copy of this powerful book. It's time for action and time for change. Order and reserve your own copy of Words, Women, and Wisdom today.
And the book has been so well received, I think partially because I set up this business, Women and Wisdom Media, to have a social enterprise element. So my commitment is for every book that is purchased, that one be donated to a women's shelter, foundation, or not-for-profit. And it's been delightful to be out in the community giving stacks of books away to women's organizations here in Calgary. And I actually had also donated a stack to G.I. Josie's, which is actually down in the States as well. So lovely to be sharing that. And I'm a big fan of social enterprise. So we talked a little bit about women and women's empowerment. And I think one of the keys is having this sense of freedom, which contributes to feeling that we're being successful, but we're also having balance. So what does it mean to be free or to have freedom? And how does that connect to building your confidence, depending on your location, obviously, your circumstances and your lifestyle? So, you know, for those who are living in war-torn countries, it may mean safety, not living in constant fear of aggression or losing your life. For the average North American who lives in you know, comparative luxury compared to those claiming refugee status or living in war-torn countries under siege, freedom is more often thought of as financial freedom. And in my experience, money does create choices. It doesn't necessarily buy happiness, but it does create more choice, which creates a short-term extrinsic reward and sense of freedom. So freedom for many women in particular is to choosing to take a day off without the worry of missing a paycheck or the choice to operate your own business rather than working for someone else. Freedom to run your own business, of course, if not set up purposefully, can simply be buying yourself a job. As this chapter this is chapter four in my book, is about awakening keywords that empower you to success, it's worth considering, you know, where do you experience freedom today? Because confident women trust that they have the resources at their disposal to remain independent instead of living in fear when they are constricted by something or someone. And by having that sustainable income, obviously you create more choices for yourself. And if we think about, you know, Maslow's hierarchy of needs, for example, that work that was done looking at the triangle of life, you know, safety and shelter are basic needs, obviously, that have to be met first. So it's hard to step into confident conversations when you're lacking the resources. It's going to feel like, you know, wearing handcuffs, restricting your freedom. So when your income flow is restricted, your behavior changes. And I've seen this with our clients as well, as they're operating from a scarcity mindset and more tightly clutching the resources that they have. Their energy is restricted and it feels small and withdrawn, and others around you feel that energy of scarcity. So, you know, certainly if you have your own business with any, opportunity to explore your income not being capped, then you know, you need to consider how you're setting it up. Because if you're running a business that is purely a service-based business, paid by the hour, eventually you're going to run out of hours, the hours that you're available to work. So you know, how can you create more value so that you can continue to increase your hourly rates? Or if you're employed, now, how could you negotiate a salary or rate increase? Now, I get this question a lot from women. You know, how can I talk about what it is that I do without feeling like I'm bragging? So often women, you know, they find sharing their success with others a challenge. Highlighting results is, you know, is simply keeping your leader current on your contribution to the team. And it's actually a fact, it's not bragging. So there's a way that I suggest doing this, and every word in the book actually has an action steps page afterwards. So this is in chapter four on the topic five of freedom. So the action steps, here's what I recommend. So if highlighting your accomplishments initially feels uncomfortable for you, it certainly does get easier with practice as you build what I call your confidence muscle. I recommend using the format of what you did, why it was important, how you used your particular skills or talent, you know, uniquely to complete the task, who was impacted and how, and when you completed it. So it's an opportunity to show that you are on time and on budget, or maybe you even delivered your project before the required timeline, and to put that in your journal. You know, where did you see success using that format to document your results and to prepare to speak with your leader to showcase your activity? You know, if your leader's not booking a regular meeting, take charge. You know, book the meeting and find a way to introduce this result into the conversation. So you will increase your comfort level when you start talking about your wins. And I know it sounds a little crazy, but some people find it beneficial to practice this in the mirror ahead of time. So again, those topics are what you did, why it was important, how you use your particular skills or unique talent to complete the task, who was impacted and how, and when you completed it. So go ahead and try that. There's also other ways that we as women can continue to feel empowered. And you know, several of the pieces of research that I looked at in my book looked at, you know, how much time is wasted fending off interruptions. I mean, that in itself is an art. So there's a few things that I would have suggested in the past that have minimized interruptions. So certainly if you're arriving early before others are even in the office, it's amazing. You might be surprised how much you can actually get done before anyone else has the opportunity to interrupt. If you have your own private office, you know, closing that door, putting your phone on Do Not Disturb, I mean, they're simple but very effective ways of keeping your focus as others arrive and that, you know, distracting chatter in the hallway begins. So you're managing your available conversation time because that's just as important as having the deep conversations. Try not to invite additional work by saying, you know, how can I help you? And, you know, unless you're in a clearly direct customer service role, your conversation partner will generally find something to add to your workload. So this offer to help you, you know, hold on to that invitation until you've got your own work completed first. And if you have spare time, it's your time. Invest it strategically because we only have 24 hours in every day. Limit casual visitors. In my one of my previous corporate roles, I actually had a stack of files or binders piled up on my spare chair so that visitors who stopped by, you know, those "do you have a minute" questions, received just what they asked for. They received a minute, assuming that my door was open. And I would stand up and walk towards them when they were at the doorway to indicate that I was right in the middle of something or just leaving. And it was very rare that they would take the liberty of moving things off the chair and making themselves all comfortable and cozy. And they did literally take a minute of my time. So that's something else you can try. You know, manage your availability. You can also suggest that, you know, they're making an interesting point and perhaps booking a time to discuss it more fully would be worthwhile, and then ask them, do you have your calendar handy, and get the time set up. You can certainly as well leverage your time much more effectively and those interruptions if you've got your work area set up for success from the beginning. So you're positioning your work area so it's not directly facing the door where you'll see everyone walking past in the corridor, which is creating a visual distraction. And yet you don't want to have your back facing the door because that's creating poor feng shui energy. So a sideways position very often works well if you're in an office or a cubicle and you can set your furniture up that way. Or you can meet your conversation partner in their office or their workspace or a neutral meeting room or coffee area, which offers the freedom that you can choose when you're ready to leave. So instead of having a chatty person in your office who, again, may require you to stand up, signaling the conversation is concluded, you can choose when you're departing. There's lots of other tips and suggestions in the book, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. It's 8 chapters. It's 300 pages plus, if we include the references and the research data that's included. And it's my wisdom nuggets gained from, you know, 25 plus years of business experience working in 4 countries, working in high startups and high tech companies, 8 in total. And then I also interviewed women, other influential and confident women, and gathered their insights and nuggets as well. And I learned some really interesting facts and some interesting stories from some of those women. It's interesting. You know, I talked to Marcy Shymoff, the author of Happy for No Reason in her own right, and then numerous contributions to the Chicken Soup for the Soul series with Jack Canfield. I talked with Melinda Whipstock, the founder for the Wings of Inspire Business, the podcast. And I talked with Ginny Gulamani Abdullah, who at the time was the BPW Canadian president, business and professional women. Talked with Catherine Brownlee, who has a immensely successful global employee recruitment company, as well as other business lines. Talked to Lisa Munda Lawrence, who was a woman of inspiration, award recipient, mompreneur, very successful lady. So I talked to a number of women. I'm not going to read them all out, but ultimately it was my ideas and wisdom plus nuggets of inspiration gathered from other interviews combined for the book. So I hope you found some value in today's session. Please do reach out, connect with me, let me know what you found the most valuable. If there's anyone on the line that has questions, now is a great opportunity in our last few minutes to address those questions. I don't hear beeping, so I'm assuming not at this time. So for today's show, I really hope that you consider, you know, how can you draw more attention to the issue of women's empowerment and equality at work. Come talk to me about the new assessment tool that I've been developing. Pick up a copy of the Words, Women and Wisdom book, The Modern Art of Confident Conversation. If you're intrigued to learn more, you can also go onto my website at wordswomenandwisdom.com, and that's A-N-D for the word. It's not an ampersand, wordswomenandwisdom.com. And on the front page there, if you would like to keep in touch and join the Women in Wisdom VIP group, just click on the picture that has Joyful 2019, and you can actually get a couple of free downloads there. And also that will invite you to be part of the group that is building. The momentum is building already for Women in Wisdom, and I certainly welcome the opportunity to keep in touch. So have a lovely day, everybody, and thank you for joining me. I look forward to connecting with you on a future Words, Women, and Wisdom show.